Our focus is on Israel today, and boy, are things boiling in the Middle East. You'll get a special perspective today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I got an email sent out by a ministry. Dear friends of ours lived in Israel for decades. Israeli citizens raised their family there. And the woman writing the email, Shira Sukaram, said that after all these decades of living in Israel, she saw that as she was walking the streets, she was just looking around, making sure that there was nothing unusual going on. That's the way things are in Israel. If people don't have to go out, they're staying home. They're looking over their shoulders because of the terrorist attacks. I want to talk about that today. I want to talk about some of the media bias, the misreporting. Friends, this has been consistent now for many, many years. We'll document it later in the broadcast. I'm talking about blatant misreporting. I'm talking about misleading reporting. I'm talking about something that I'll say, 4 killed in attack in Jerusalem, without telling you that there were 3 Israeli citizens killed in cold blood by a terrorist, a Palestinian terrorist who was then shot dead by security forces. Well, you don't get it like that. You don't get the full force. We'll document these things for you. Hopefully, we'll even have a video with further documentation produced from today's show that we'll post in the next day or two. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884, with any Jewish-related questions that you have for me. I'm also going to be speaking with some of our FIRE missionaries on their way to the Middle East, talk about what's in their heart, why they are going, what they expect to accomplish. But I do want to take your Jewish-related calls along the way, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, so listen. I just posted this out, sent it out on Twitter earlier, and I said, so immediately after the last blood moon, the fourth of the lunar eclipses, Israel is plunged into what could be the beginning of the third intifada. Is that worth thinking about? And somebody posts sigh to draw what conclusion? That Jesus is coming back, that we're in the last days, please spare me. Well, I have a double sigh for that gentleman. All I've said and wondered about is, could it be that God is getting our attention and having us focus on Israel? That's all I thought the blood moons were about anyway, that there could be some major things happening, and this was God's way of getting our attention. Not that this means Jesus is coming in 11 minutes, not that this means we have 36 seconds left in world history, but rather that this is a momentous time. There have been momentous times in Israel's history many times, and sometimes, in fact, in the last 50 years, a number of times, or 70 years, they have coincided with these lunar eclipses falling at the same time of the major fall feasts and biblical holidays, holy days through the year. So, what is so strange about saying that God is using lunar eclipses in conjunction with the biblical holy days to get our attention? What's so bizarre about that? Why is it greeted with such skepticism? Plainly, honestly, that kind of attitude concerns me. Just like the severe gullibility concerns me, where, oh no, this is it. We got to put it on the calendar, Jesus coming this day. That gullibility concerns me. And this cynicism concerns me, to be perfectly frank with you. All right, we're going to talk with a young couple now about to head over to the Middle East. We'll find out why when we come back on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. It is Michael Brown, and I'm sitting here with two of our fire missionaries, actually a third, wearing a really nice hat, but she won't be speaking to us today. It'll be her mom and dad, Neil and Lindsay, with us. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we have with us this week missionaries from around the world, grads from Fire School of Ministry, who are out on the field or some on their way out on the field. So we get to have some special interviews. We're recording some to play in weeks to come as well. But I'm sitting here live with Neil and Lindsay. Great to have you both on The Line of Fire.
It's good to be back, Dr. Brown.
All right. Now, we did an interview with your daughters one day. We didn't air that one, but that was a highlight for everybody involved. But this one is actually live and going out everywhere. Neil, where are you heading towards?
We are going to Iraq.
Iraq. All right. Now, I hear that. I'm used to that. We've got lots of folks in Iraq serving right now, northern Iraq, Kurdistan area, and doing an amazing work. We've got others in other parts of the Middle East. We can't even disclose location. But here you are, married man, a mother. How many kids do you have?
Four.
Four. How old are they?
8, 5, 2, and 3 months old.
Okay. And you are heading to Iraq. Now, you're doing it with a smile, and we're confident about your plans, and we're working with you, but talk to others who think, what, are you crazy going to Iraq? Why would you do that?
Yeah, we travel around to a lot of churches before we leave, and we meet those same questions. What are you thinking? You have small children. This isn't smart. This isn't safe. And I point people to 2 Corinthians 4:18. We don't focus on what is seen, but what is unseen. What is seen is temporary. What is unseen is eternal. And I remind people that ISIS is temporary, the sword of Islam is temporary, but the glory of Jesus is eternal. The church is eternal, his blood is eternal, and this is what we are focusing on. We are simply walking with Jesus in the desert and doing what he is asking us to do.
And what's your goal when you go over there?
To see Muslims encounter Jesus and fall madly in love with him.
And are you aware of that happening already?
Yeah, it's incredible. We hear stories and testimonies of dreams, Muslims having dreams about this man of peace dressed in white, speaking truth to them, healing them in their dreams. We hear so many testimonies of Muslims who have already encountered Jesus. Now they just need to find somebody who can answer their questions about Christianity, about who this Jesus truly is, because what they've been taught their whole life is lies. And so they encounter him in a dream, and it completely shatters the lies that they've been brought up with. So now they need someone to come and help them, teach them, disciple them, mentor them.
Mm. And Lindsay, as you and your husband are in agreement about going over, this is something in both of your hearts. How have you worked this through as a mom with small children? What did God put in your heart? How did you hear his voice saying, go for it?
One of the things that makes me really excited is just the certainty that when the Lord called Neil and he called myself to the Middle East, that it wasn't just the two of us, but that it was our family. And just the opportunity to minister together as a family, you know, the way that he's gifted and he's crafted each of our children in such a unique way. It's just exciting to think about how he can use that in such a dark place. So I think I'm just filled with excitement knowing that he's sending us with all these arrows and these instruments that he'll use in such a great way.
Yeah, and I wish folks could see you as we're speaking, just the light and excitement that's in your eyes as you speak. Now, Neil graduated from our schools, has become an accomplished videographer. We were just talking about some of his work before we went on the air. Lindsay, what's your own educational background?
I got a master's in national security and economics from Texas A&M.
She's the smart one of the group.
All right. So does that tie in? I mean, it's kind of interesting to have that background and then be called to the Middle East. How does it tie in for you?
It is. It's interesting because I spent a lot of years working towards what I thought would solve problems in the Middle East. That was a big focus in grad school for me.
Really?
And I always thought it's international aid, it's military support. And the whole time, I didn't know it was as simple as Jesus. So it's really exciting to be going there armed with what can really solve problems.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Now, Neil, you've been over to the Middle East. Where have you been so far on trips?
Yeah, we actually lived there as a family in 2013. We lived there for 3 months.
In Iraq?
In Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've also traveled through Jordan and Israel and Turkey.
And what's your impression being in these different countries of the mood of the people? I mean, you're limited. You haven't gone everywhere. It's hard to really drink it in. But from what you could tell, what's the mood of the people?
Yeah, the people are hungry. They're definitely hungry and thirsty for truth. Islam has proved itself to be bankrupt. I believe ISIS has revealed that. It's a great time right now for the church to come in with hope and life and truth. Even though the Muslims in the Middle East are diehard Muslims, there's no doubt about that, there still is a vacancy and a void inside of them that Islam is not able to fill.
Yeah. And what about the refugees? I know where one of our teams is based, the refugees have been pouring in, and they've had an unbelievable opportunity to minister to them. Some true Christians, some nominal Christians, some Muslims. Have you been with the refugees at all?
We have. When we lived there in 2013, we spent the majority of our time in the refugee camps. And when Jesus says the fields are white for harvest, I think he's specifically talking about refugee camps. I'm joking. But seriously, the refugee camps are an unbelievable wide open door for the gospel right now. These are the ones who are seeing the fruit of Islam. They're seeing what Islam walked out to its full extent accomplishes. And it accomplishes families that are ripped apart, destroyed, and ending up with no hope in a refugee camp. So we have plenty of opportunity to come in, to sit down with them, drink their tea, befriend them, build relationships with them, and openly and boldly share the gospel.
Yeah, and obviously when hope comes alive in their heart with all that they've lost, it's got to be really the difference between death and life.
It really is. And you know, there's a misconception here in the West that you can't talk about Jesus with Muslims. You can't pray for them in Jesus' name. Well, that's just a lie from the enemy. We have seen Jesus heal and touch countless Muslims in the refugee camps. They listen openly. They listen eagerly to the words of the gospel. They receive prayer in Jesus' name. And it's amazing what happens when people filled with faith pray for someone in Jesus' name. Jesus always shows up.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And Lindsay, as you're over there with your family, what did you find about relating to the women, relating to the children? Was there an open door for you as well?
There was. It's really a great opportunity for women who love the Lord and want to go serve over there, because men can't disciple women. But women can disciple women, and there's a huge need for women to disciple new believers. And the children, they love babies. So it's great because, you know, they would come to me because I had a baby with me, and I was able to pray for a lot of the children when we were there in 2013. And it was just a really great opportunity to love on them. And there were several times where even praying for the children that the mom would feel just a touch from the Lord and start weeping. And so it was really
amazing.
It was really great.
And how do your kids feel about going back?
They're excited. Yeah, we've been really careful not to push our own excitement onto them. But I can tell that they're getting excited.
Yeah, I would be. Mm-hmm. I would absolutely be if I were them. What a great day ahead of us. And do you hope to use your video skills there as well, Neil?
I do. I believe the Lord put that into my hand for a long-term reason, not just for my time here in Charlotte. So I'm curious to see how the Lord's going to use it once we get over there.
And 1 minute before we're out of time, how did being at Fire School prepare you?
Oh, my goodness. We could not be walking this way if we didn't come to Fire School. The vision the Lord gave me was in a chapel service at Fire School that initially set us on this path to the Middle East. the training, the equipping, the men and women of God that spoke into our life, just the intimacy with Jesus that we as a family were able to cultivate, man, it happened at Fire School of Ministry, no doubt.
Yeah, and just watching over the years, you have matured in amazing ways. It's not that you were immature when you got here, but just the growth and the strength is amazing to see.
Thank
you. So we are really excited about the future. And one of these days, we'll get over to visit all the teams and see the kids. Maybe we'll do an interview with the kids from Iraq one day, or at the least, we'll do it by Skype, all right? So, Neil and Lindsay, if you want to find out about what they're doing or get behind them, go to our missions website. That's fire-international.org, fire-international.org. Their last name is spelled B-R-O-E-R-E. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I've got a lot of clips to play for you, a lot of ground to cover. Keep your seatbelt securely fastened, even if you're not driving your car. It's 866-34-TRUTH. Let me grab one call, then I want to play some clips for you from my colleague and friend in Israel, Ron Cantor. We go to the Bronx. Mitch, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I usually listen to you on podcast and rarely live, but I have a question, so that's why I'm calling.
Yeah.
The conflict that's going on in Israel now with the Palestinians and Israelis, what's a good book to give me, like, the history and documentation about what is the root of what's going on? Because I know Dershowitz's book and Finkelstein's, and that's like on both sides of the left and the right. I want something that's going to give me like the truth.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Obviously, Alan Dershowitz and Norman Finkelstein will both say they're giving you the truth, but I agree they are on either side, although I'd be much more with Dershowitz on these things than with Finkelstein. Remember, Dershowitz is a liberal Jew, so he's not coming with some radical conservative argument. But let me give you two books, okay? The first is by Ephraim Karsh. Ephraim Karsh, and it's called...
Can you spell Karsh? I'm sorry.
Yeah, K-A-R-S-H. K-A-R-S-H. Ephraim Karsh. It's called Palestine Betrayed. I'm telling you, Mitch, this is a shocking read. He's a great Middle Eastern scholar. He has studied archival documents in great detail, and you will be shocked by what you read. He lays out plainly that the great problem was the Palestinian, the Arab leadership that hurt the people. Clear documentation of Israel working as hard as it could to live in peace with their Arab neighbors and the war that was declared against them. It's an eye-opening read, and it is massively documented, okay? So that I would get from a top textual scholar who dug and did his homework, and it smashes a lot of myths. Ephraim Karsh, K-A-R-S-H, Palestine Betrayed. Another book, which is a broader overview, and that will try to bring in both sides as much as possible, is by my Messianic Jewish friend, Michael Rydelnik. His name is spelled R-Y... D-E-L-N-I-K, Michael Rydelnik. He's a Messianic Jewish professor at Moody Bible Institute. It's called Understanding the Arab-Israeli Conflict.
Okay.
Understanding the Arab-Israeli Conflict, what the headlines haven't told you. And he really does his best to be fair, to be compassionate, to give arguments on both sides, but obviously to come down in what I believe is the right side of this issue. So Ephraim Karsh, Palestine Betrayed, and Michael Rydelnik, Understanding the Arab-Israeli Conflict. I think with those two, you'll be well-equipped to understand the issues, answer the objections, and really know the history.
All right. Thank you so much. And also, congratulations on the weight loss. Been following you for like half a decade. So.
Oh,
anyway,
awesome.
Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm thriving physically. I appreciate it. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to play a few clips from my friend Ron Cantor in Israel. Was never caught up with the whole, this is the end, blood moons, oh, this is, it's all over, the Shemitah, but was watching in Israel, living there for years now with his wife Alana and their kids, and saying, okay, is God saying something through this? Is he seeking to get our attention? So he reviews some things that have happened in these weeks since the final lunar eclipse and some that took place during the four lunar eclipses, the so-called blood moons. We'll start with number 9.
Were there any remarkable future-altering events over the past Shemitah year? In my opinion, yes. First, the emergence of ISIS, the violent self-proclaimed caliphate. A caliphate is an Islamic state led by a caliph who is the political and religious leader and thought to be the successor to Muhammad. While they were established before the beginning of the Jewish year, they certainly have come to prominence during this past year. Secondly, the tensions in Israel on the Temple Mount. They have not been this intense since September of 2001 when Ariel Sharon defiantly walked on the Temple Mount, triggering a violent intifada or uprising. This event just happened to also take place at the end of the Shemitah year, assuming the Hebrew calendar is correct. Like then, the present tensions revolve around a fake controversy in order to stir up Islamic fervor. Sadly, it's working, and we've seen a stark increase in terror attacks.
Ah, so that is interesting. By the way, you hear the handwriting there because there's writing like on a board as he's speaking on this video, so don't be distracted by that. Let's keep going. Clip number 10. Ron has more to say.
Third, the historic collapse of America as the world superpower cannot be dismissed. 7 years ago, when Obama came into office, no one would have believed that Vladimir Putin would have usurped the role that America has been playing since before World War II. The absence of American backbone opened the door for Russia. As I speak, Russian troops are battling in Syria on behalf of the evil dictator Assad. It's just a few hours from here. The boldness and bravado of the Russians in light of the timidity of Obama and Kerry is disturbing. Even sad.
Yeah, right on. Again, Ron, I agree with you. There's more. Let's keep listening.
Fourth, who can forget the massive sandstorm that covered all of Israel? It was the worst in modern history. For 5 days, we couldn't even see one star at night. And it just happened to lift on the last day of the Shemitah year, just hours before Rosh Hashanah. Lastly, let's talk about the economy. Now, we did have a very scary hiccup at the end of August, right at the end of the Shemitah year, but we seem to have recovered. But we can't ignore the collapse of the Chinese stock market. This collapse could have worldwide implications, and it took place just 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. They're calling it in China Black Monday. Since June, the Chinese stock market has lost 40% of its value. Being the largest country in the world and having the second largest economy, there's got to be a ripple effect.
Again, is this enough to get our attention and to say some things major happened? And if there was a Black Monday in America on a Shemitah year and then a Black Monday in China in a Shemitah year, you're talking right around within weeks of each other, is that enough to get our attention? Why not? Why not? Isn't this a good way of God using his calendar and God using natural phenomenon? Stars, sun, moon, things like that, to get our attention, especially when it pertains to Israel. I say, why not? Hey, friends, this is a great time to stand with us. There are so many fine ministries around today, but I do believe that God has given us an important work to do as well, and a very unique work. And if you care for seeing Jewish people come to faith, and if you care to see the church equipped to minister to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and to abandon erroneous theology, you recognize that by God's grace, we are doing a very unique work, but it is listener supported. It's with your help. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday is on the air because of you. Join us today. Your one-time gift or monthly support would mean the world to us and would personally encourage me. If you can help in any way, go to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. Click on Donate.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, my joy and privilege and honor to be with you today. I want you to hear something really striking. Clip number 15 next. This is a Palestinian activist, a journalist, an analyst, and he is responding to the calls for boycott, divestment, sanctions, BDS, and responding to charges that Israel is an apartheid state. This is a Palestinian journalist, analyst, activist, respected man, Bassam Eid. Listen to what he has to say. This is quite shocking.
I was in South Africa for several times. I don't think that Israel is an apartheid. Apartheid was totally different regime from what's going on right now in the occupied territories. I think that we still, the Palestinians, almost integrated into the Israeli society. We still get our medical care in the Israeli hospitals. We still joining the Israeli universities. You have doctors who are serving as directors of departments in the Israeli hospitals. You have an Arab judges right now in the Israeli High Court of Justice. And I don't think that what we got right now under the Israelis, they ever have it during the apartheid.
Wow. Now, notice he referred to the occupied territories. So he's using the standard rhetoric. He refers to the occupied territories. That's how he perceives it. Yet he says, no, this is not apartheid. You can't call this apartheid. He has more to say. Clip number 16.
Our economy is laid on the Israelis. We are surviving from the Israelis. We are working at the Israelis. We still have 92,000 Palestinian workers right now in the West Bank only, who are crossing every morning the checkpoints and going and working in Israel. So imagine if Israel one day will impose a boycott on the Palestinian workers, what will happen to us? I don't remember ever that there is one Palestinian who authorized the BDS to speak on behalf of us.
Wow. He's saying, okay, you're all calling for boycott, divestment, sanctions against Israel. What if Israel did that to the Palestinians? What if Israel said, okay, we won't let any of your people work for us. We won't let that happen. And you won't benefit from being part of our economy. Fine, if that's what you want. And are Palestinians calling for it? Fascinating points from a respected Palestinian analyst and journalist. 866-34-TRUTH, Matthew in Fairfax, Virginia. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Hello, Matthew, you there? I guess not. We lost Matthew. Listen, learn to get past the headlines. Learn to sift, to go in deeper. Learn to do some investigating. I've had reports sent to me that are completely outlandish and shocking. It doesn't take me long. I'll take a look at it. It's like, something's funny here. I'm no scholar in that particular area, but something is funny. Or I question it. Or could it? Are you sure? And then I go and check. And then I go and dig deeper. And then I go and think, okay, there's more to the story. People have sent things to me online and they're in a frenzy. Now, look, there are things that happen, and they are shocking. They're terribly shocking. But there are plenty of others. Misinformation. Oh, I'm going to illustrate that for you. Stay right here on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
وإعدام أطفالنا بالدم البارد كما فعلوا مع هذا الطفل أحمد مناصرة.
That was the voice of Mahmoud Abbas. He was speaking about a 13-year-old Palestinian. He's talking about this young kid who was shot in cold blood, who is now a martyr for the cause. And boy, when you see the video, when you hear it, it's really jarring. I'll let you hear it now. There's a man apparently cursing this kid and apparently saying, "Die, animal, die." Listen, it's chilling.
موت يا مانياك موت يا مانياك تموت يا ابن الشرموطة تموت يا ابن الشرموطة.
The sounds are absolutely jarring. The boy is laying there. He's a Palestinian kid. He's apparently shot in cold blood. He's laying there terrified. He's bleeding from the head. There's a passerby yelling, "Die, you animal, die." Mahmoud Abbas then makes reference to him as a martyr. And listen to this report from Press TV. This is Iranian TV. Palestinian teen shot by Israelis, stomped on, left to bleed to death. It says he had allegedly stabbed a settler. Police, however, have not yet proved the claim. Israeli soldiers and the passerby did not give the boy any first aid or comfort as he was dying. An Israeli police member even kicked him back on the ground. The Muslim world in an uproar over this. What in the world happened? How absolutely terrible. Hang on. Time out. Those are not the facts. That is blatant propaganda. Here is what happened. This 13-year-old, along with his 17-year-old accomplice, went looking for someone to stab in Jerusalem. They tracked down one man, stabbed him when he ran for his life. They went looking for someone else. Israel has since released footage. You can watch the footage. You see it with your own eyes. Here are these boys looking for someone else to attack. Here's a 13-year-old Israeli boy. He goes to a candy shop. He gets on his bicycle to drive off. And what happens to him? He now gets attacked, and he's stabbed by this 13-year-old 12 or 13 times. The boy is in critical condition. That is what happened. This 13-year-old Palestinian was not shot in cold blood. The security forces then shot him. And yes, as he laid on the ground, this passerby is outraged. This kid just tried to stab another kid to death. Yes, what he says is reprehensible, wishing that he just die as an animal. But the reality is the kid didn't die. He's taken to an Israeli hospital. Israel released footage of the kid in the hospital. You can see it with your own eyes. There is the kid in the hospital being treated by Israel. But he's being hailed as a martyr by Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, and in the Muslim world, hailed as a martyr who was shot in cold blood by these cruel Israelis. Lies, lies, lies. But this is a steady pattern for many years. I want to go through some documentation for you here. BBC, British Broadcasting Company, has a long history, a long documented history of misleading anti-Israel reporting. One organization called Camera.org, it exists to check the media's reporting on Israel, looking for accuracy in the media's reporting. It goes back to 2001. All right. And it's been documented since then. But this is the first time I saw it. It was back in 2001. Here's Israeli actions against Palestinians. This is May 2001. Israeli attacks kill baby girl. Israeli tanks attack refugees. That's April 2001. Israel turns firepower on Gaza. These are April, May 2001. Israel hits Arafat's nerve center. Israel launches helicopter attacks. Israel attacks despite diplomatic push. In other words, Israel is attacking. Israel is attacking. Israel is attacking. Palestinians are dying. Here's how Palestinian attacks against Israelis are reported during the same time. Israeli baby killed by gunfire. Whose gunfire? How did it happen? Who shot? Just gunfire. Bomb stokes Mideast tension. Whose bomb? What bomb attacking whom? mortars injure Gaza settlers. Whose mortars? Israeli teenagers stoned to death. Who stoned them? Who killed them? Suicide blasts shake Israel. It doesn't say the Palestinians are doing it in any of these cases. Same thing with the LA Times. Here, headlines going back to 2002. November 11th, 2002, Israeli soldiers kill senior members of Islamic Jihad. November 11th, 2002, gun attack kills five Israelis at kibbutz. Whose gun? Just a gun attack. Gun just attacked them. January 19th, 2003, Israeli soldiers kill two Palestinians. January 18th, 2003, gunman, Israeli settler, die in raid. So when the Israeli soldiers are doing something, they are killing Palestinians. They are killing senior members of Islamic Jihad. When Palestinian terrorists are the ones doing it, it's a gun attack that kills five Israelis. Just gun, boom, boom. Gun just started shooting somewhere. Gunman, Israeli settler, die in raid. Just happened. Just a gunman and Israeli settler. What kind of gunman? But perhaps a Palestinian terrorist who killed the Israeli and then was shot and killed himself? Here, 2014, a horrific attack. Palestinian terrorists during early morning prayers in a synagogue in Har Nof, a community, a neighborhood in Jerusalem, religious Jewish neighborhood. They go into the synagogue and they start butchering people, meat cleaver, knives, guns. It's absolutely horrific. The scenes from the synagogue are sickening. I mean, they are just paths of blood and the Jewish prayer items and prayer books covered in blood. It's an absolutely horrific scene. How did CNN cover it? Initially, they reported it as a mosque attack, not a synagogue attack. Here's the report. Four Israelis, two Palestinians killed in synagogue attack, Israeli police say. That was the initial headline. Four Israelis, two Palestinians killed in synagogue attack. How about two Palestinians kill four Israelis and are killed by security forces? How about two Palestinian terrorists murder in cold blood Jewish men in their prayer shawls and are killed by police? And then when it was on the air, just headline on the air, this is the way it read. Four Israelis, two Palestinians dead in Jerusalem. What kind of garbage is this? What kind of biased reporting is this? What kind of misleading misinformation is this? And then a headline just from a couple of weeks ago. Attacker kills two in Jerusalem. Once again, we're not told who the attacker is. Why not say Palestinian terrorist kills two in Jerusalem? This is the BBC. They were called on this. It took them, I think, four revisions before they finally got it right. I mean, there are other headlines that are documented from other newspapers, British, American news services. It's the same pattern. Why not tell the truth? Oh, I am all for saying when Israel is guilty of injustice. I am all for calling Israel on the carpet when Israel does wrong. But let's get the facts straight. Why can't we simply say Palestinian terrorists killed Israeli? Palestinian terrorist murders Israeli. Palestinian suicide bomber blows up bus. Palestinians shoot and kill Israeli women and children. Why can't we say that? Why can't the reporting just say it? Why does it have to say gun attack kills Israelis? Attack in Jerusalem leaves two Israelis, two Palestinians dead. Why can't the truth be reported? And how about the truth about that 13-year-old? But you know what breaks my heart more than anything about all these accounts? That 13-year-old was raised in an environment of such hatred, raised in an environment of such vilification of Israel. Don't tell me it means nothing when, since he was a little boy, he saw on state-run TV little cartoon characters acting things out, talking about how they wanted to kill the Jews. Don't tell me it doesn't matter when he would do school plays and school presentations where they'd write poems about killing the Jews, killing the Israelis. Don't tell me it doesn't matter when you name streets and boulevards after mass murderers, people, suicide bombers, mass murderers who killed men, women, and children, who wiped out whole families. that were just going to have a slice of pizza somewhere. Don't tell me that when you name a street after that person or have a display at your college celebrating the event where you actually have it dramatized again with the blood and everything, and now you're celebrating that. Don't tell me that doesn't get into the psyche of these kids. And then whatever mistreatment they endure and whatever negative views they have of Israel that are reinforced through their daily situation, that's the real tragedy. The kids are raised with this hatred so that at the age of 13, they want to now go and stab Jewish people to death, even another Jewish kid from a candy store riding on a bicycle. That is the ultimate tragedy. And when people corrupt their kids like that, they are responsible. And then when the media is complicit, God help us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Hey, friends, we're going to expose the lies here. We're going to expose the lies here on the Line of Fire. We are going to exalt the truth and expose the lies so that you can be informed, you can be equipped, and you can speak truth to power, you can speak truth to media, you can speak truth to social media, you can persevere and get the truth out. And just be assured that ultimately the truth will be the last man standing. 866-34-TRUTH, you got Jewish-related questions. I'm going to go back to the phone shortly. This is a report from Ian Hatchett on Breitbart.com, conservative news website. MSNBC's Diaz Balart to Israeli police, there didn't seem to be an imminent danger from a man running with knife. So this is MSNBC host Jose Diaz Balart. He's pressing Israeli police foreign press spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld on whether the shooting of a man who ran past Israeli police with what the Israeli police said was a knife was justified, saying it seemed there was no imminent danger where he was shot. Now remember, Israeli men, women, and children being killed in cold blood on the streets. You're walking down the street and suddenly out of the blue, someone jumps up behind you and starts stabbing you. All right? People killed, people wounded, husband killed, wife wounded, baby wounded. This is happening. All right? Day and night for several days now. It has been a reign of terror in Israel. And now you see a man running down the street with a knife. And according to Rosenfeld, he tried to attack security guards. The knife, 20 centimeters, that's almost 8 inches. That's a knife, okay? It'd be bad enough if it's just a little pocket knife. You're going to hurt somebody with that. But you're talking about an 8-inch knife. So listen to this, clip number 13.
You're calling this an update to a terrorist attack?
That's correct. We confirmed the terrorist attack. The suspect himself, we're now looking into his identification, where he came into Jerusalem from, and if he was a Jerusalem resident. What we confirmed is that he had a knife, 20-centimeter knife, that he had tried to attack a security guard. Quick police response at the scene by units that are in and around the area shot and killed the suspect. There was no other option due to the fact that there was life danger and threatening situation to our police officers there. In and around Jerusalem throughout the day was relatively quiet, but let's not forget yesterday, 3 Israelis were killed in Jerusalem in 2 separate attacks, and therefore heightened security is going to continue in Jerusalem as long as necessary.
And Mickey, explain to me, because the video that we have, and we were right there in situ when this incident occurred, it seems as though this individual who did have a camouflage T-shirt and camouflage pants did have what appears to be a knife in his right hand. We have something else in his left hand. We've been able to actually clearly see this, Mickey, but it didn't seem that in the area where he was shot, there was anybody nearby. There were no civilians. This was a very well protected and sparse area. It happened about, 3 o'clock in the afternoon your time. But it seems as though in the area, there was no imminent danger where he was shot, as we see this video.
Oh, boy. No imminent, it shouldn't have shot him. Yeah, let's criticize Israeli security for shooting a Palestinian who's tried to attack security guards and has got an 8-inch knife in his hand. And in the last few days, there have been all kinds of knifings. If you go to social media, you can see on Facebook, Israeli Defense Forces have posted this, where they're showing the different ways to kill somebody. They've got people dressed up as rabbis, dressed up as Israelis, and they're showing, here's, you stab them here, you stab them in the neck like this, you run by, do this, here's how you stab them there. It's no imminent threat. Clip number 14.
A person with a knife running past police and then into an area where there are no apparent other civilians. Does this warrant 12, 14 gunshots, semi-automatic and automatic gunfire when he's got his hands up with a knife in his hand?
That's absolutely correct. When we're talking about life-threatening situations to our officers, we expect our officers to shoot and neutralize the terrorists. And certain terrorist attacks that have taken place over the last 10 days, in fact, since the 3rd of October, our police officers have managed to neutralize altogether 12 terrorists. But in other cases, we've had to shoot and kill terrorists. Altogether, 9 terrorists have been shot and killed until now.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, I mean, and just to understand, I mean, if someone is running away from officials into an area where there are no civilians, or at least nearby, and he's running away from the officials with a knife in his hand, that is, you know, his shooting death is warranted.
You know what? You know what? The Israelis got it all wrong. If the guy was just running out into kind of an empty area, hey, win the guy over. Let's. Everybody likes soccer, right? Football. You can play that anywhere. Let the Israeli soldiers put their guns down as a sign of goodwill. And sure enough, he'll play with the knife in his hand because he's a little insecure. And let's just play a little soccer with the guy. Maybe sit down, have a nice cold drink with him in the afternoon, and just kind of chill and say, hey, you got family, we got family. Hey, man, we're closer. We're blood brothers, really, in different ways. Let's work this out. Hey, man, we're all brothers, right? Hey, on the ground level, relationally and all that, yeah, build relationships. Build relationships by all means. Young people, build relationships. People get to know each other by all means. You got a terrorist who's attacking people, and it with a knife in his hand, he could have dropped the knife and fallen on the ground on his face. And you watch one of the attacks, the guy after he's shot then tries to throw the meat cleaver that he was carrying at the guy shooting. And then he gets up and keeps trying to renew the attack. And they still hadn't killed him. They still just subdued him. All right, let me try to grab one call quickly. Matthew, reconnecting in Fairfax, Virginia. We're a little short on time, but go for it.
One thing Trotter didn't point out was also another significant thing that's happened is in 1967, they closed the gates to the...
I think we just lost you somehow, buddy. Not sure what happened. So were you going to say in 67, gates were closed to the old city? Of course, that's when the old city was liberated, and gates are being closed now. Well, in any case, a bunch of things going on. Hey, thanks for calling in. Sorry we've lost the connection twice there with you. But look, even Russia getting involved in the Middle East in a way that it has not, in a major way, it has not been involved in decades. And America joining the United Nations to sign the nuclear treaty with Iran. These were momentous times. And these last couple of years, these last couple of weeks will be looked back at as momentous times. That's enough for me to say there could well have been something with these blood moons and Shemitah of God getting our attention. That's all I ever thought from the beginning. And it looks like it could well be that we need to focus and really pray, because momentous things are happening in Israel, and that has to do with the redemption of the world. Keep listening to the Line of Fire broadcast. Keep listening to these Thoroughly Jewish Thursdays. Make sure you check out my latest article, When Murderers Are Made into Martyrs. My bottom line today, it can be really frustrating with the media's misreporting on Israel, but be patient and persevere, because ultimately the truth will triumph. Our focus is on Israel today, and boy, are things boiling in the Middle East. You'll get a special perspective today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, a whole lot is going on. I've got enough audio clips to play for a couple of hours. In the first hour, we put together some audio clips for you that we've got some video for, and hopefully we'll be releasing a video in the next day or two that'll really be an eye-opener about media bias against Israel, misreporting. I've got more on that. But it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That means any Jewish-related question or comment you have, feel free to call in 866-348-7884. So it needs to be Jewish related. It could be Hebrew Bible related. It could be related to, is Jesus the Jewish Messiah? It could be a Hebrew question. It could be a question about Judaism. It could be a question about Middle East conflict, and even more broadly about Islam. But there's some questions I can answer well in Islam, some not as well. But we'll gladly take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. If you differ with me, if you don't believe that the modern state of Israel is a fulfillment of prophecy, if you think we are being misled or misleading others by teaching that God still has purposes for the nation of Israel, by all means, call in with your best argument, 866-34-TRUTH. Interesting, PLO has issued a revised English version of Mahmoud Abbas's execution speech. So yesterday, video going viral day before of a Palestinian boy, 13 years old. He's laying on the ground. He's in a pool of his own blood. He looks terrified. There's someone passing by calling for him to die, just die like an animal, die. It's just terrible verbiage. And we're told he was shot in cold blood and not given medical attention and bled to death. And Mahmoud Abbas referred to his execution. He's being hailed and celebrated as a martyr. The facts of the matter, as we discussed in more detail in the first hour, was that he and his 17-year-old colleague went into Jerusalem looking for people to stab. They stabbed one man who ran away for his life. Now they go looking for others. The 13-year-old finds a 13-year-old Israeli boy leaving a candy shop on his bicycle and stabbed the kid multiple times, I believe 13 times. That boy is in critical condition. He's then shot by Israeli security forces. The 17-year-old is killed by the security forces in the struggle. And then because of what he did, he shot. I don't know the details of whether there was a fight back and forth, but he shot. He dies. The 13-year-old is taken to the hospital. Israel releases footage of the boy being attacked on the bicycle. Israel releases footage of the boy in the hospital. And now PLO has issued a revised English version of Abbas's execution speech. The modified English version was released by the PLO's Negotiations Affairs Department, which says this was a full translation of Abbas's speech. It speaks about the shooting of our children in cold blood, as they did with the child Ahmed Manasra and other children from Jerusalem. Cold blood. The kid was trying to murder Jews. He tried to murder a 13-year-old kid himself, and he was shot. He was not shot in cold blood. He was shot because of his crimes attempting to murder, and then he was not allowed to bleed to death. He was brought to the hospital where he was treated and is recovering. The Arabic version does not talk about shooting. Instead, Abbas is quoted as talking about the execution of our children in cold blood, as they did with the boy Ahmed Manasra and other children in Jerusalem and other places. The so-called English translation was published in response to accusations made by Israel against Abbas following his speech. The problem is that Arabic speech has been duly recorded. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I want to get into some clips where my friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach is taking strong issue with Secretary of State John Kerry, who has basically blamed the increase in violence in Israel in recent days. He has blamed it on settlement expansions, Jewish settlements in, quote, Palestinian territories. And Rabbi Shmuley rightly takes Secretary of State Kerry to task on these things. So begin with clip number 21.
Secretary of State John Kerry recently linked the wave of terror attacks where Jews are being knifed and murdered in Israel with Israel's settlement activities. This is an astonishing statement of blame the victim and should be rejected by every American with a moral compass. Remember, our Secretary of State has had a broken moral compass for decades. He was the one who famously accused his comrades in arms, the brave American soldiers who were fighting to keep Vietnam free, whatever mistakes were made there, that they were hordes and legions of Genghis Khan. He took a few rotten apples and he tarred and feathered the whole American military with it. He has yet to sincerely apologize for that. He would later accuse Israel of being a semi-apartheid state. And now he says that Jews are being killed not because of anti-Semitism, not because of Jew hatred, not because of radical jihad, not because of Islamists who want to destroy Israel and annihilate Israel, but rather because of Jewish occupation.
Ah, all right. So Shmuley does well to bring up the larger history, the larger issues, and say, does Secretary of State Kerry have the most reliable moral compass over the years? But let's focus in on this specific situation. Well, what if there were settlements taking place in general? What if there's occupied territory? Then doesn't that justify the anger and the hatred? Clip number 22.
Let's be clear. Even if there were an occupation, and these are disputed territories in Judea and Samaria, not occupied, I'm not going to get into the legal wranglings of that now, but even if it were so, would John Kerry say that if Tibetans were stabbing Chinese children in the heart on the streets of Beijing, that it's because of the Chinese occupation of Tibet? If Turkish children were having their throats slit on the streets of Istanbul by Cypriots, would John Kerry say it's because Cyprus has been occupied by Turkey since 1974? If Russian children were being gunned down on buses in Moscow by people from the Crimea, would John Kerry say this is happening because of an occupation, or would he say that there is no justification for murdering children, murdering innocent women, murdering innocent men? The broken moral compass of John Kerry is an embarrassment to the United States. It is an astonishing betrayal of American values. The United States stands for a human being having infinite value and created with certain rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Dead people, murdered, can't be happy. Their families, who have to grieve and mourn for them, can't be happy. Kerry should apologize to the people of Israel and the Jewish citizens of the United States, and indeed every American citizen, for his astonishing inability to distinguish simple good from evil.
Yeah, way to go, Shmuley. I'm going to have a comment about my friend Shmuley in a moment, but let's listen to one more clip. I do not believe the rhetoric is exaggerated. I do not believe it's rhetoric. I believe those are articulate comments rightly exposing the absurdity of Secretary of State Kerry's comments. And even if he believed those things, have the civility, have the restraint, have the wisdom not to speak them when Israeli blood is flowing in the streets. Last clip.
The terrorists who seek to kill Israelis do so because they will never accept a Jewish state in their midst. They have never done so, and they unfortunately seem to never want to do so in the future. When Hamas has a charter saying they will annihilate all Israelis, it has nothing to do with any occupation. There are no Israeli soldiers in Gaza. Every single person was forcibly withdrawn. Would John Kerry tell us that American soldiers being blown, God forbid, to smithereens by IEDs in Afghanistan by the Taliban has something to do with America occupying Afghanistan, or if the same thing was happening by Iraq? God almighty, Secretary Kerry, you're a leader of this nation. Why don't you finally fix that broken moral compass?
Now, I want to make a larger observation here. Rabbi Shmuley and I have debated many, many times. It's been some years, but we've debated many times, normally on the issue of is Jesus the Jewish Messiah, and then specific issues within that, specific texts and concepts within that. And then we've debated a couple of times at his request about homosexuality or evangelicals making this into the bogeyman. This is the big problem in America. Is it the greatest moral crisis in America? Are we approaching it wrongly? We've debated that a couple of times as well. Some of the debates are available in our online store. Some are available free online for viewing. But if, in fact, I have won those debates, if that is the case, and there are Jewish publications online that say that very thing, that they weren't happy with the debates, so they weren't happy because of our side winning, all right? So if that's true, I'm not going to be the one to say that, obviously. If that's true, it's not because I'm more eloquent than Rabbi Shmuley. He is as eloquent as they come. It's not because I have a way with words or a vocabulary that he doesn't. No, quite the contrary. He has a way with words and has quite a vocabulary. It's not because he's not quick on his feet. I've watched him in a debate just to kind of figure out where the crowd was at and shift things a certain way so as to get the crowd on his side. I just smiled to myself. I said, that's my buddy. He does it so well. If, in fact, God's graced me, I'm a good debater, but I'm not going to win a battle of words with Rabbi Shmuley. If, in fact, I've won, it's because I'm on the side of truth, because Jesus is the Messiah of Israel. If I've won, it's for that reason. So I just wanted to throw that out, because listening to my friend, I think, yeah, he's eloquent, and you could give him something spontaneously, could speak on it eloquently and make a great case for his position. So if, in fact, I've won those debates, it's because I've been on the side of truth. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to High Point, North Carolina. Travis, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Michael, I've had to switch to the podcast because 1 hour is not good enough. You are really a great part of my day every day.
Well, thank you.
Listen, yeah, absolutely. I hear it at least once a week, somebody call in with the church replacing Jews question, or I'm thinking of the girl also that called in a couple weeks ago about the Sardin question. If I could have any, the greatest debate I could possibly think of is Jews with Stephen Anderson. Those on the couch where you talk it out for a couple hours, not the formal debate style, like the kind he did with James White, dig in the scriptures and get down to the Jews. The church replacing the Jews or the replacement theology stuff. I don't think he's anti-Semitic at all, but I do see both sides points equally, and I just really think it would solve so many questions, and it would be a huge internet video. I know this thing would live forever on YouTube. It's just, you two guys are the perfect of each side of the debate, the argument.
All right, so here's a question for you. I will never refuse a debate with a qualified opponent, okay?
Yeah.
I'll never back away from it. The problem is this. I once debated a rabbi who barely even believes in God, and when I got up partway through the debate and said, this debate tonight is a debate between one person who believes the Tanakh, the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, is the Word of God, and another who doesn't. And people in the audience sighed, how could I dare say that? And the rabbi said, yeah, that's true. He agreed. It was supposed to be, let's say, a boxing match, and ended up a street fight with like biting and kicking. So you're doing your best to conduct yourself rightly in it. My problem with Stephen Anderson is not the extremity of his position on Israel. And I've just seen a couple little clips. But if I'm correct, he is a militant King James-only preacher. And one of his viral videos on the internet is the words in the King James where it talks about a man urinating against the wall, but it uses the old word, P-I-S-S. And he gets into this whole tirade about why that was taken out by translators and how you need, if you're a man, you need to stand when you urinate. You don't sit down. And it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And I cannot separate the guy behind those videos and I think the King James only fanaticism and then the attack on Israel. It's hard to separate them. I'd much rather debate a professor or a theologian or another pastor that didn't have the other baggage. Stay right there, all right?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, before I get back to Travis and talk about debates, I know this is really short notice. I'm talking 2 hours and 10 minutes from now, but everybody listening to me in Charlotte, if you're listening on 960 AM or 105.7 FM, if you're listening to me anywhere in greater Charlotte, if you're north or south of the city, east or west of the city, maybe listening on another frequency, special announcement. Maybe you can get home a little later or change your dinner plans, but this is a special event. It's a lead-in before the Apologetics Conference that begins, hosted by Southern Evangelical Seminary at Calvary Church. But here at Calvary Church near Southern Evangelical Seminary, so is that Pineville Matthews area? There is a special event. It's a media event, but the public is welcome. Seating is limited. 5:30 today. This is a suddenly announced event. Dr. Norman Geisler will be with a colleague of mine, Philip Williams, and one of the men, well, the man that may be the discoverer of Noah's Ark. He's the discoverer of what appears to be Noah's Ark in Turkey, Parasut. He will be there at the event. There's going to be a panel discussion with young and old earth creationists participating. Skeptical scholars is involved as well. So, 5:30 today. Just show up. You don't need a ticket. All right? If you can do it, if you can make it over there, Calvary Church, this is not far from Southern Evangelical Seminary, so it's in Pineville Matthews area. And let's see, it's the Crown Room at Calvary, 5:30 today, a special presentation about developments and the potential discovery of Noah's Ark. And Dr. Norm Geisler is putting this together. So for those that know his scholarship, take that for what it's worth, that he is the man behind the event, Philip Williams, who's written extensively on this and who himself has been over to the mountain to look at these things. He'll be there. 866-34-TRUTH on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So, Travis, back to you. There are some others. There's another radio host whose name I forget at the moment. We've been trying to work out how to have an extensive debate. I did one with Dr. Gary DeMar. We've got the audio up. I'm not sure what happened to the video. I inquired about that a couple of weeks ago, but we should have that up as well. I'd love to have a full-length debate with anyone else qualified to do it, and I don't mind if they have radical positions. My problem is when someone has a lot of baggage and extreme views and is also known for aggressively going after people that he differs with, I don't mean physically violently, but I mean aggressively verbally, sometimes to do the debate is now to give credibility to the person or their position. I would much rather someone else who holds that same position or even has the same radical views, but who doesn't have the other baggage, do a debate. So can you understand that position? Does it make sense to you?
You know, Michael, honestly, I can't. You talked about the King James Version. You talked about urinating on the wall. And I'm a big fan of yours. But Steve Anderson I saw him sit down for 2 hours talking to Jews who don't believe in Jesus and being completely respectful. Like I said, the James White debate, they only challenged, they're so nice to each other. And this is a man who goes door to door every free chance he gets, knocks on doors, tries to win Muslims to Christ, and he does. I don't know of any pastor any famous pastor that does this. They're all building mega churches. And I really think you might.
Well, are we talking about the same person?
Yeah, absolutely. I know this guy.
Because Dr. White had some massive concerns after in the
James
aftermath
White,
of the debate. It got
a prosecutor.
No.
James White debates like a lawyer, not like he believes the scripture. That's what we need to dig into.
No, but hang on, James. James is a clear-headed thinker, but James debates based on scripture. That's the foundation of his life. I'm talking about afterwards.
He debates on winning the debate, not on changing the person's mind. Like
well, I differ. I know James really, really, really well, but just tell you what, there may be good qualities to Stephen. All right, and that may be the case, and perhaps he would be worthy of doing a debate. It could well be, but there's too much other junk out there that is really ugly, really bad. Just because you're good in one context doesn't mean you're good in another context, all right? And some of the levels of charges of things that are being brought are quite extreme. So in any case, I tell you what I'll do. I will get our team to look into things and to come up with a fair assessment. Like I said, I would absolutely never for a split second a step back from debating anyone in any area of expertise I had if that person was a qualified opponent. I want to be fair to their side. Let's say, for example, it's a 12-year-old kid who wants to debate me and can't even read the Bible. Well, you're not being fair. But listen, I appreciate the call. I differ with you on your assessment of James White. He is absolutely trying to change people's hearts and minds and loves the Lord and loves the scriptures and is doing his best to speak the truth. And hey, how many people do you know that actually go into Muslim mosques, biggest mosque in England and major mosques in South Africa, to the mosque itself alone without a team with him, without bodyguards, and go in there and debate Muslims? Why? Because he wants to win them to Jesus and be a witness. But Travis, I love the fact that I'm a daily part of your life through the radio broadcast. And if we're talking about Stephen L. Anderson, well, we'll do a little homework. All right, and perhaps there could be a debate. But thank you, sir, for the call. If not him, then someone else worthy of a debate. But thank you, sir, for the call. If I've got any of my information wrong, I will absolutely correct it on the air. 866-34-TRUTH. Israeli politicians rightly slamming Mahmoud Abbas's lies about the 13-year-old boy's, quote, execution, killed in, quote, cold blood. Israeli officials on Wednesday night tore into Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's claims that Israel executed a 13-year-old Palestinian boy. This is Times of Israel staff reporting today. And let's remember something, friends. Let's remember that the Palestinian populace is probably never going to get the truth about this. Maybe some will, but many or most will not. They noted the child was not dead. Again, we got video, audio. We'll demonstrate all this. We'll post it for you later. They castigated the PHE's failure to note that the boy had stabbed and wounded a young Israeli in an unprovoked terror attack before being shot. Deputy Foreign Minister Tzipi Hatzavelli said the claims sanction the actions of murderers and terrorists, some of them children, to go and carry out attacks. The blood of our wounded and murdered citizens is on his hands. Yesh Atid leader Yair Lapid called the speech a miserable performance showing lack of leadership. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And so what I want to preach about this morning is the subject of the Jews and their lies. That's the title of the sermon this morning. The Jews and their lies. Now turn, if you would, to John chapter 5. I'm going to get into the first lie of the Jews.
Yeah, so that was the aforementioned Pastor Stephen Anderson that Travis would like me to debate. And again, his positions are quite militant, extreme in certain ways. And there are other concerns I have, but if he's a worthy debate partner on the church replacing Israel or the, quote, Jews and their lies, then fine. Now, did he get that title from Martin Luther's virulently anti-Semitic work concerning the Jews and their lies, which Adolf Hitler used as a template for treating the Jews right up to extermination? Everything before that, basically, Luther had advocated. We'll look into it. 866-34-TRUTH. A quick clip from Senator Ted Cruz, clip number 8. He is mentioning something of interest after the Democratic presidential debate the other day. NCIS, by the way, got more viewers than the Democratic debate. I think it was less than half of the recent Republican debate, which is also telling in terms of national interest. But Senator Ted Cruz.
You know, one of the numbers that I think summed up last night, those Democrats attacked the NRA 14 times, attacking a group that protects the Bill of Rights. In the entire debate, they mentioned Israel once. This is a group of Democrats that won't stand with Israel, that won't stand up to Iran, that won't stand up to ISIS, but will come after American citizens trying to strip away our Bill of Rights. Last night was an audition for who would wear the government jackboot, and that's why the American people are ready to change the path we're on.
Yeah, he's talking with Megyn Kelly, and good observation there. And look, I'm not a member of the NRA. And I understand the issue about gun control. I understand the issue about the right to bear arms. That's not my focus. My focus is how interesting that Israel came up so little, whereas it was a major issue with Republican candidates. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Michael in Salt Lake City, Utah. Thanks for calling the line of fire.
Hi. How's it going?
Very well, thanks.
So I have a few questions for you.
Sure.
So I'm a Jew, not a Messianic Jew. I'm a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a Jew at one point.
I'm a Jew. Yeah, I'm a Jew.
What's that?
I'm still a Jew to the core of my
being.
Well,
we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. But here's my question. Why did you turn away from Judaism? And what do you see in Jesus that says to you definitively that, yes, he is the Messiah, and because if I'm assuming you know Jewish thought fairly well, right? So I don't understand how you could have possibly determined that he's the Messiah when it's so clear for Jews that he's not.
So let me just find out. I'd love to answer your questions, and thanks so much for asking. We're going to have a break that comes up in a minute, so we'll continue on the other side of the break. But you're an Orthodox Jew?
No, I'm not Orthodox. I'm conservative, kind of, in practice, but more reform in thought.
Okay, so you've thrown off the history of Judaism up until the last 200 years. You've thrown off the vast majority of Jewish traditions, customs, even approach to the Bible, Talmud. So that strikes me as, you don't strictly observe the Sabbath, correct?
No, not in an Orthodox way, by any means.
All right, so the way that generations of Jews would have up until the Reform movement. All right, so just something for you to ponder. I am living far more according to the Bible, according to the Hebrew Scriptures, than you are, by the way, and have far more reverence for the Scriptures as an Orthodox Jew would. So it's funny that you're questioning me about moving away from Judaism or saying how could I question traditional beliefs when you've thrown most of them out yourself. Interesting. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. This is Michael Brown, and I'm speaking with Michael, a Jewish man in Salt Lake City, Utah. Michael, I absolutely want to answer every question you asked me, but I do find it fascinating that you're speaking about my, quote, turning away from Judaism and saying I'm no longer a Jew because I embrace Jesus Yeshua as the Messiah of Israel.
And well, certainly. So you say that since I'm not Orthodox, you're more Jewish than me, right? But how can that possibly be true when, and you know it as well as I do, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. So, I mean, Hear, O Israel, Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You believe in the Trinity, and also your concept of Satan in Christianity is really just dualism from Zoroastrianism, that concept of the good God and then the bad God. And how can we have an omnipotent God if there's an equal and opposing rebellious force?
I don't know. I've never met anyone that believes nonsense like that in my life. Never met anyone that believes any such thing of an equal.
No.
Listen. You're hearing myths. You're repeating myths, Michael.
From okay? Rabbi Tovia Singer?
Yeah, you Rabbi know, Tovia, well, who's he's refused to debate me for more than 20 years.
He
has refused to debate me since our last debate for more than 20 years. Let me give you the history of Rabbi Tovia. We first met in early 1991 at the invitation of a Russian Messianic Jew. He had just come to faith in Yeshua the Messiah, and he asked me to come to his house to debate some rabbis from Baltimore on who is the Messiah according to the book of Isaiah. I said, are you serious? They're actually going to do that? He said, yeah, at my house. Well, it was a setup. He tricked me into coming over, invited Tovia Singer, Michael Skoback, Mickey Miller, and another young lady named Joanne Chinkers, who's now a missionary in Nigeria. She was an Orthodox Jew living with the Satmar Hasidim at that time, was so shaken by my debate with Rabbi Tovia. That was the beginning of her coming to a living faith in Jesus the Messiah. In any case, and when people ask her who led you to Jesus, she says Rabbi Singer did. In any case, this Messianic Jew, to my surprise when I got there, and to Tovia's surprise, then presented us with roughly a three-hour program, all right? We were to debate sin and atonement, Messianic prophecy, things like that. And he wanted to see who of us could do better in that setting. There were maybe 15, 20 people there. People had tape recorders, pulled them out and recorded. At Rabbi Singer's request, those were never released. That's part one, okay? But Joanne was so shaken by that event. This is all public record. She was so shaken by that. That was the beginning of her leaving the error of rabbinic tradition and embracing the truth of the Messiah. Then Tovia and I did another debate that was hosted by Sid Roth. He had a radio program that aired on secular radio all over greater New York at that time. And we did a debate, secular Christian audience. We did that debate. Then Tovia and I, together with Sid, because we had to get things down, it was in the days of cassette tapes, we had to get it down to 90 minutes. So we agreed, okay, this call was extraneous, this we didn't need. We agreed on the final edit. We put it out. It was supposed to be aired on TV by CBN. We had the contract signed. Tovia said, I'll sign mine after. He then refused to sign after the whole thing had been videotaped. 2 weeks later, he had to come back on the air to apologize because he said if I could provide him with one single text in rabbinic literature saying that the Messiah, son of David, would die, one single text anywhere, or that it referred to him in Isaiah 53, that he would become a Messianic Jew. Of course, he made a silly error. I had the documentation right then presented to him. He came back on to apologize. He said, we're not going to hold you to your promise. Obviously, it was just rhetoric. From that day on, he has refused to have a public debate with me under any circumstances. I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd give him my own airtime. I'd fly in at my expense. I'd do it in a synagogue. I'd do it in a neutral location. I'd do it in the church. I'd do it for 6 hours. I'd do it for 2 hours in a heartbeat with joy. There's even a petition that's been out for several years asking him to debate. He will not even debate a single Messianic Jew now. A couple months ago, I got a call from a Christian college in South Carolina that a representative of Rabbi Singer was saying he would come to the college and do a debate. And we said, great, I'll gladly do it. They got back to him and said, no, he will not do it. He will debate Christians, different ones, ministers. He will not debate a Messianic Jew, in particular me. He will not even talk to me on the phone. And we're talking 20-plus years now, Michael. Truth,
and why,
fact.
And why do you think that is?
God knows his reasons. I cannot say, but I can guarantee you this. He knows he's not going to win the debate. We put out a 22.
I disagree. The last one I heard, I thought he won. But maybe I'm biased because I'm a Jew. So I don't know.
You could well be biased, but the fact is we've put it on our website for free for many, many years. But let's get back to your points. Intertestamental Judaism speaks of a satanic figure, of a devil, in terms that it is exactly the same as the New Testament. He is not an independent, omnipotent agent of any kind. He is not a borrowing from Zoroastrianism. It comes from the Tanakh, where he's referenced several times. He's referenced in the book of Job, in the book of Zechariah, and in the book of Chronicles, in First Chronicles. That's where he's explicitly referenced. He is hostile to God. He is accusing God's people. That's the role he continues in the New Testament. He is under our feet. He is a defeated foe. He is not omnipotent. He is not omnipresent. He's not omni-anything. He is a defeated fallen angel. And if you want that same teaching, go to intertestamental Jewish literature. That's number one. Number two, of course I believe that God is Echad. Of course I do. I believe in one God only. He is complex in his unity. Where's the first reference to Echad in the Bible? Do you know, Michael? The very
what
first reference? Where's the first reference to Echad in the Bible? The very first reference?
Couldn't tell you. You're going to have to tell me.
Genesis chapter 1. There was evening and morning, Yom Echad. So evening and morning come together as day one, one day. Where's the next reference to Echad in the Hebrew Bible? Genesis 2:24. The man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two will be Echad, Basar Echad, one flesh. All right? So I believe in a God who is complex in his unity. That explains why he can be seen on earth in Genesis 18, walking and talking with Abraham, and yet be transcendent, filling the universe, and sitting enthroned in heaven. I believe in one God who is complex in his unity, which is why his Ruach, his spirit, which teaches and leads and guides, is not inanimate, is intelligent, why his spirit can speak through the prophets, while his presence can fill the Mishkan, the tabernacle, while his glory can fill the universe, while he can sit on his throne, and at the same time appear to people like in the temple in Isaiah the 6th chapter, where Isaiah sees the Lord high and lifted up. The Messiah had to come and begin his mission before the second temple was destroyed. He had to fill that temple with glory. He had to die for the sins of the world and rise again in harmony with the Jewish teaching, Mitatan Shel Tzadikim Techaper. The death of the atonement, the death of the righteous atones, is taught often in the Talmud and Midrashic literature. He had to fulfill those scriptures. He had to fulfill what was written about his death, his resurrection by the people of Israel, his being received by the Gentiles, and then after that, being welcomed back by his people Israel. All has happened right on time. It's all according to the Jewish scriptures. And by following these, I'm now functioning in my capacity to be a Jew and thereby be a light to the world.
So how then do you reconcile, believing in Jesus with the fact that God explicitly says that he's not a man? And I can't give you the verse or the chapter or anything along those lines, but I know it's in there. And he says he's not a man. And I'm sure you probably know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, you've debated a lot of Jews, and I'm sure they've brought this point up to you before.
God isn't a man. Of course he's not a man.
Then is Jesus God?
Ah, here's the question. Can God manifest himself? So what does the New Testament say? The Word became flesh. This is an aspect of God. This is part of who God is.
No,
and the Targum, it's called
New Testament, though. You have to use the Old Testament because the New Testament.
Okay, Genesis chapter 8. Genesis. What I'm trying to explain is the New Testament does not just say Jesus is God. It says the Word, which is the divine utterance, the divine mind, the Son becomes flesh. So yeah, I can show you in the Hebrew Bible where God appears as a man. Can God, the creator of the universe, appear in human form if he wants? Numbers 23:19, God is not a man. Repeat it in 1 Samuel the 15th chapter, God is not a man. And in the context is he's not a man that he should lie. However, is there anything in the Bible that says that God cannot appear in human form? that God cannot come down in our midst while remaining eternal God. Remember, he's the Ein Sof. He's the infinite one. So he comes down and pitches his tent in our midst. Genesis 18, read it clearly. Yahweh, God, appears with two angels and talks to Abraham face to face and has a meal with Abraham and talks to Sarah. And then when the two angels leave to go to Sodom, Abraham has an extensive conversation face to face with God, after which God leaves. So explicit in the Hebrew Bible, God can appear in human form. So my question to you, is it impossible for an infinite God to sit enthroned in heaven, fill the universe with his glory, and appear in human form? If you can stay on, I want to talk to you a little bit more, then I'm going to try to get some other calls. Also, can I send you a book for free? Absolutely free. We won't put your name on any mailing list. If I can, tell Betsy.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I've actually written five volumes, 1,500 pages, with countless hundreds of endnotes, answering Jewish objections to Jesus, demolishing a lot of these arguments, but in detail, with lots of documentation from the scriptures, from the Hebrew scriptures, and from rabbinic literature as well. And then, because Tobias Singer put out a tape series that was widely used, widely distributed years back, I actually did a lecture series, 22-hour lecture series, taking a lot of my book material and putting it into audio form and video form, countering the counter-missionaries. And I devoted a special time there to demolishing some of his arguments because they had been widely used. So we've got a lot of material out there, and then some of it condensed in the one volume, The Real Kosher Jesus. Hey, Michael, I love having this conversation. I want to get to a couple of other callers, and we'll gladly send you books. As long as you read it, that's all I'm asking is that you read it. I know you're going to read it from your viewpoint, but like I do with anything, I just pray. I prayed regularly. I don't mean together, side by side, but I prayed a prayer privately, and an ultra-Orthodox rabbi prayed a prayer privately, because we've had dialogue for years, and he's written a lot of responses to what I've written, and we've had great interaction for many years. But for a period of time, we would talk on the phone once a week for about 45 minutes to an hour discussing issues. Not Tobias Singer, but this ultra-Orthodox rabbi. And he agreed to pray a prayer with me. So when I pray it, I pray for him, and I pray for me, and then he reverses it, praying for me and for him. So I pray for him by name and for me that God would give us the courage to follow the truth wherever it leads, regardless of cost or consequence. So I think that's always a healthy prayer to pray, because more than anything else, I want to please God as a Jew. I don't care what I lose. I don't care what I suffer. I don't care what happens. I don't care who likes me or doesn't like me. I want my whole life to be pleasing to God as his Jewish son, whatever that means. That's what I desire. And I have great respect and esteem for many religious Jews and religious traditions, and I believe that God's used them to help keep our people through the ages, and yet I differ categorically with other points. But just my one question for you, sir, is this. Can God, who's the Ein Sof, the one without beginning or end, the infinite one, can he simultaneously fill the universe with his presence, sit enthroned in heaven, and appear in human form on the earth?
I mean, I suppose it's possible. I don't believe that he's done that. But I guess, you know, it's possible. He's God. He can do whatever it is he wants to do. But I have one more question for you, which is, you know, when Mashiach comes, where it's supposed to be worldwide, like, recognition of God, right? Well, that hasn't happened. There's plenty of people who... There's atheists, there's agnostics, there's Muslims who, you know, they say they worship the same God as us, but it's quite different. That hasn't happened. And so if these things haven't happened, how is Jesus the Messiah? It just doesn't seem to add up to me.
Yeah, it's a great question. If the Bible said that the Messiah will appear one time And when he appears, the whole world will come to acknowledge God. You'd be 100% right, except that's not what it says. It indicates
he's going to come twice.
It says, if you look, for example, the end of Isaiah 52, it says he'll be highly exalted, starting in verse 13. Those are the words it starts with. He'll act wisely or prosper. He'll be highly exalted. And then next verse, verse 14, but he will suffer terribly. He will suffer terrible disfigurement. And then as you go through reading Isaiah 53, he'll first be rejected by our people and die a terrible death. This happens first. According to Isaiah 49, the Messiah speaking first person, he says that it looks like his mission failed, that he was unable to regather Israel. And God says, no, you won't just do that, but you're actually going to be a light to the Gentiles, a light to the nations. So he'll be rejected by his people, he'll be a light to the nations, and then ultimately he'll be received. What about the Talmudic discussion in the Tractate Sanhedrin in the Talmud beginning in 96b, where it asks the question, it quotes from Zechariah 9:9, that the king of Israel, the Messiah, will come riding on a donkey. Meek and lowly, riding on a donkey. And then it quotes from Daniel 7:13-14, where it says that he'll come riding in the clouds. And it asks the question, will he come meek and lowly, riding on a donkey, or riding in the clouds? And the answer is, if we're worthy, he'll come in the clouds. If we're not worthy, he'll come riding on a donkey. So then the obvious question is this. The Bible doesn't say it's either or. The Bible says it's both and. How can that be? First, he comes riding on a donkey. In accordance with Malachi the third chapter, Haggai the second chapter, and Daniel the ninth chapter, he has to do these things before the second temple is destroyed. He comes and makes atonement for Israel. He is rejected by the nation, received by the Gentiles. His mission now continues through the world. There are now hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of worshipers of the God of Israel through the Messiah that did not exist in his day. And at the end of the age, there'll be a turning of the Jewish people, and as Jewish people welcome him, then he'll return. I can show you all that just from the Hebrew scriptures. So there are two parts to the mission, Michael. That's the critical thing. And it should it surprise us, we rejected Moses at times in our history. We rejected the prophets. The vast majority of Jews around the world today are not Torah observant. They're not Shomer Shabbat. They're not following the dietary laws. Can't read the Talmud on their own. So they have rejected biblical truth and rabbinic tradition. Should it surprise us that when the Messiah came, we missed him? Look, we've been in exile most of this history. The temple was destroyed and never rebuilt. Could there be something to that? So if you understand this rightly, you're light years ahead of most in that you know who Tovia Singer is, you know who I am, you've thought about right. The issues, you have intelligent questions, intelligent objections. But right. What I'd like to do is this. In a way that it's not going to be a matter of who wins, you know, which Michael wins, Salt Lake City or the radio host, right? But a matter of two men who want to live for God as Jews, whether you accept me as a Jew or not, is immaterial. And in a calm, dispassionate way, what are the facts? So listen, I've got to run, but here's the deal. Because of the nature of your call, I didn't take any of the calls this entire time. Those on hold, I apologize. If you can call tomorrow, if you've been waiting, I'll put you up first, all right? But Michael, I'm sending you the book, The Real Kosher Jesus. And I'll throw in a debate I did with Rabbi Shmuley also on Isaiah 53, did Jesus die for our sins? So the book, The Real Kosher Jesus, to read the debate. Once you have a chance, you don't have to stop life to do this. Once you have a chance to watch the debate, listen, then give me a call back, all right? And we can continue our discussion. But thank you, sir. For the call, much appreciated. From Michael to Michael, much appreciated. And thank you, sir, for listening. So we'll get those out to you, The Real Kosher Jesus and Did Jesus Die for Our Sins? Thank you, sir, for the call. Much appreciated. All right, friends, that's what Thoroughly Jewish Thursday is all about. A call like that is priceless. Please pray for us that God would meet every need and enable us to expand our work on radio and beyond. My bottom line today, Yeshua said this himself, if you continue in my word, then you'll know the truth. The truth will set you free. You'll be my disciples indeed.